Come now, all you mangy dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm, if your work be not too shoddy. Careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. But Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Well, shiver me timbers. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Live streaming today from somewhere off the fall season shores of South Korea's shadowy Sticks and Hammer Peninsula, you're listening to episode 79 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Forget the drama of writing. Forget the politics of writing. Forget even the rest of the industry. Writers should write, period. Wielding a horrid sense of humor, this week's guest is Bellingham, Washington author, poet, lyricist, and frontman for the hard rock indie group Anibus Unit, Minds.com's very own Thomas Duder. With what we regard as perfect timing for our Friday, October 13th date, over the course of the next 90 minutes or so, we'll work to explore a range of topics, including all things action literature, alternative lifestyles, and heavy metal / punk music. Performing over the past few years throughout the Bellingham, Washington area, Duder's group, Anibus Unit, has rocked out at various regional venues, including The Cabin, The Waterfront, The Swillery, The Shakedown, and Chubba Fest. Their debut CD, Internet Terrorists, is jam-packed with the kind of material many pirates love best, including a well-mashed mix of explosive lyrics, hard-hitting percussion, and take-no-prisoners power chord riffs. Available now for your listening pleasure via most standard online indie music outlets, including SoundCloud, Bandcamp, and Reverb Nation, you can do your part in more formally supporting the group by purchasing their tunes through CD Baby. Hoping we weren't going to be jinxed by Friday, October the 13th, as things turned out, there were a few gremlins in the works, and we did not get off to exactly the kind of start we'd hoped to, although it looks now we've managed to rebound, thank God. So it would be great if we could manage to, at some point or another here along the way, attract or assemble more of a technical production staff or team. Thomas, do you have many of those types of folks there at your disposal on your end of things there in Bellingham? Geez, we might have lost Thomas now too.
Hello?
Okay, there we go. I guess
you muted.
You muted.
It was actually completely muted over here, and I'm like, oh goodness. So I was listening in on the YouTube live recording.
Oh man, Friday the 13th clusterfuck. So hopefully things managed to resolve and correct themselves here over time. Yeah, what do you figure? To talk about, we just switched over to the new OBS studio just last week, actually. Teresa Clayton. We fired the streaming software up for that show, and things seemed to go relatively well. We were doing a bit of a test run here for episode 79 with you this week, last night, of course, and the slideshow was choking terribly. So I edited out a few of the, I guess it was the PNG files seemed to be freezing for some reason or another. I have no idea why that was the case. A bit of a bug, I suppose. So. But hey, man, looks like we're here, managed to make it. From all accounts and indications, we are indeed live. streaming out over YouTube this week. So, hey, man, thanks for dropping by.
I'm glad to be here, Jaffe. And plus, let's not forget, it's October. Yeah, Halloween's coming up, but today is Friday the 13th, and you just got a new program? We have got to exorcise these gremlins, sir.
Hashtag tech navvies. Hashtag
tech priest, maybe.
So, wow. Well, we got a lot of ground to cover here. I know we did a bit of a pre-interview yesterday, had a pretty, you know, decent, high-energy conversation. You yourself, I guess, just overnight managed to kind of fall ill somewhat and come down with a bit of a cold.
I didn't even want to mention that.
You don't want to talk about that? Well, yeah. You know, shit happens.
Gremlins. I woke up and there's a spot in the back of my throat, and that's like, oh, my goodness. Ever since then, I've just been mustering my energy because I do bring it when I come at a situation like this. I do bring as much as I can. We go hard. You know what I mean?
That you do. In fact, that's one of the things that we're hoping to get to here over the course of today's 90-minute conversation and presentation is Anubis or Anubis unit?
Anubis unit, like the Egyptian god of death, Anubis. It's not an old bus, it's a new bus. I love that joke. We do that dad joke too many times in the band.
Yeah, you got a decent front man. You really, some of the shtick that you managed to come up with really comes across quite well. I gave your, pretty much your full release, the Internet Terrorist album, complete listen last night, which isn't always the case with all artists. You know, we've got a showcase coming up here via minds.com. Just to be clear, folks, we do not bear, there's no formal affiliation with minds.com whatsoever. They're simply an open sourced platform that we've been a part of here for close to 2 years now. It's not like we're getting any special treatment or have any special relationship with the Ottman family or anything like that, any of the co-founders necessarily. Although it is interesting to note, we did the first show that we managed to put together here where I was not the host or nothing. I was kind of just lurking around in the back area because at that point, really, I had no interest in being a host at all, per se, so much as just maybe a helper or contributor, maybe a co-host kind of deal. That was on the table, I suppose. But, yeah, great platform. A few bugs and different kinks they've been working on trying to get a handle on here over the course of things. But yeah, the showcase is coming up, and that's once again just our project in itself. The way that we've got things set up there, it's the Minds World Indie Music Showcase 3.0. And one of the things that we ask is that you do have a Minds profile, and secondly, that your music is copyright free. We've been dinged a few times already with the other episodes that we've put together in the past where YouTube has really, they've jumped all over us there and shut us down, really. We're, you know, demonetizing what we put out there, trying to share it indie music with the world. So make sure your music is copyright free. Is that the case with you guys?
We own our own copyright, and for the most part, I do try to get other people to use that music for their blogs. I use it for my own blog, you know, especially African Rage and Mean Measures of Today. Cut it up a little bit, and it's great for a 10 to 15 second intro or outro, you know? Hell, even a 1 minute outro. One thing I do need, a caveat to what you just said, though, about Minds.com, they have given you one special thing. You met me, so I'm just saying.
Oh, hell, dude.
Bring the treats, my friend. Bring the treats.
We're out there headhunting clear across the high digital seas. So you're one of those great personalities that jumped onto our radar screen, and we were quick to reach out to and ask that you be a part of our weekly presentation. So, but let's hear a little bit about who actually Thomas Duder is, something of your backstory, how it is that you first came into music, what led you to and so on and so forth.
With me, actually, I do split my projects up because I am involved with a lot of things. I don't know if you noticed. In fact, on Minds.com, on my profile, I've been posting up the entirety of my first book from the Generalist series up there. So there's my books, there's my music, and then there's my YouTube shenanigans. And we don't talk about the fourth thing, which is all the marketing that I do all across social media. For the most part, now with the music, let's just jump to that with the Anubis unit. So I met the drummer at a particular warehouse in where we're working in the deep freeze area, right? And we just clicked, musically wise. You know, not only in the kind of music we both enjoy, but also just, you know, when you're working in a deep freezer for like 12 hours, you tend to sing because it helps warm you up, you know? And he started drumming out a beat on one of the totes and we just went from there. It's taken us roughly 5 or 6 years to even get the band to be as stable as it's been in the past 2 years. And we still have some issues. We're actually trying to find a second guitarist right now, just to round out our sound, a rhythm guitarist. But otherwise, there is the lead, there's the drummer, there's myself, and there's the bassist. And the bassist didn't even join in until last year. So it is kind of a slow-to-grow project, but it's one that has a lot of staying power, and it was built to last. It was built to be that way from the get-go. You mentioned that you listened to the album Internet Terrorist last night, right? Did you ever figure out, or did you ever follow the storyline that goes with it, right?
Well, I tell you, man, look, I've heard a lot of music over the years, independent and otherwise, and it is a fucking great. It's like the hard rock kind of thrash version of Pink Floyd's The Wall or something.
Whoa, that is wow. Okay, thank you. I gotta tell my. I'm gonna point this out to my guys. I've already shared this all over my social media, but after we're done here, I'm throwing the link on this to the guys in the PMs in their Potato Lounge. But for the most part, we do have a sweeping backstory to the characters involved. It's also especially lit upon in Storytime Jam, Year One, in that album. It's in the center piece of the album. And yeah, indeed, it just follows along the adventures of four heavy metal battle gods as they seek to fight the corporate machine in Satanus, which might be Latin for Satan. And for the most part, it's just a hell of a rockin' time, man. A lot of violence and a lot of good stuff.
Indeed. We will, in fact, try to queue up one or two of those songs here over the course of today's presentation. But before we get around to doing that, let's talk a little bit about Friday the 13th. I thought we might as well, given the fact that, you know, here we are. So,
that spooky Scaringtons.
It is apparently considered an unlucky day. Well, as most of us know, in Western superstition, 13th day of the month in the Gregorian calendar, on the Friday, yada, 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 just reading off directly from Wikipedia here. The history, oh shit, can you pronounce this word? Triskaidekaphobia? Jeez.
Triskaidekaphobia?
Triskaidekaphobia, we'll leave it at that. I don't know. an analogy to the fear, Friday the 13th, is, oh my god, parakistrigakaphobia. We'll forget about that one too. But apara, of course, from the Sanskrit, meaning to go beyond. You know, a lot of the Sanskrit has found its way into English over the years, believe it or not. So para being one of those great prefixes which has superstition surrounding this day may have arisen in the Middle Ages, originated from the story of Jesus, Last Supper and crucifixion, in which 13 individuals are present. Let's see what else. Of course, there's a Templar tie-in as well, too. Let's not forget Jacques de Molay. It was Friday the 13th, 1307. If we do the math here, folks, I think it's about, in fact, 700 years. Is that what we're looking at? We did interview, as a podcaster based out of Canada, I guess. We haven't really been in too much touch since the show actually took place. I thought it was a pretty good interview, but maybe there was something that was said. Canadians especially, some of them tend to be quite easily triggered by any little thing. So, you know, I myself being a Canadian, but not of that sort whatsoever. I look at things more along the lines of, like, free speech, you know, give me liberty or give me death. And as do a lot of our colleagues and compadres here on the Robin Hood. So I think we all know the story. Oh, here we go. Yes, Friday, October the 13th, 1307. Is that 700 years ago to the day?
1307? I think it's like 710.
710. There we go.
It would be 1317.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously not real much of a math major here on this one. The date, Philip the Fourth, I think he was also referred to in some quarters as Philip the Fair. Not too fair when it came to this necessarily, but that aside, arrested hundreds of Knights Templar and so on and so forth. So, yeah, any thoughts yourself on Friday the 13th? You superstitious guy?
For the most part, now, believe it or not, no. Now, I do have a background in the supernatural. I've done some things back in California, but that was like nigh on 13 years ago, by the way, as of this year. Funny story. But when it comes to certain superstitions, like throwing salt over your shoulder, things of that nature, a lot of the things what branded me as the heretic back in California was the very idea that it's all the same thing. Faith is magic, is psychic power, and the whole damn thing is just mind over matter. It really is the will of humans. You know, the will of the imagination, nonetheless, of humanity, manifested. So when it comes to Friday the 13th, it's never bothered me. In fact, usually some of my best accomplishments have been done on a Friday the 13th. Like, no joke, no joke. And once again, the number 13 itself, I have no fear of that personally. But that's also the kind of person I am, you know? I mean, some people may shiver at the fear of, oh my God, Friday the 13th. But then you got the horror core types out there who are like, oh God, it's time to marathon Jason. So, you know, I'm more of the latter.
Some of your best things have been produced on Friday the 13th. Hopefully today will go down in history as being one of those. We'll just have to wait and see. But do you know that actually the word heresy is from the Greek term heresis, I believe, which simply means choice. That's all it is. So choosing. So isn't it interesting too? All the heretics through the years, those goddamn heretics. You know, we gotta take care of them. And you know, the historically targeted individuals. All they're doing was choosing.
Persecuted, yes.
How dare they choose? You know, these. Why can't they just? You know, we all have this same kind of groupthink where you don't think outside the box and keep it inside the lines. So
you know, Robert A. Heinlein, now, as a writer and just as a man, I mean, growing up, reading Robert A. Heinlein changed my outlook on a lot of things. In the book Friday, which is certainly one of his finest outside of the Future Histories saga, there was a saying that one of the main characters, or one of the main characters' father, I guess you can say, pointed out, and that was, you can either bask in the warm glow of, you know, the fireplace of faith, or withstand the cold truth, you know what I mean? I'm just saying. So when it comes down to things like that, yeah. And when it comes to the past and when it comes to the history, indeed, not all heretics are just blatant anarchistic pagans and such trying to light everybody on fire and pass around syphilis. The church did plenty of that back in the day. Just people who believed that the world was round to begin with were persecuted as heretics, that the earth revolved around the sun, persecuted as heretics. The first person who cut, I think it was actually a Greek guy, yeah, the first person who cut open a cadaver for the first time just to start labeling and seeing what the human insides were for the very first time, heretic. But there's always the need for such progression, for such progressives. There's always the need to turn your back on pop culture and popular ideas and what they quote unquote know to actually find the truth. Like you said earlier, to make the choice. And that's also redolent in our music too, by the way. I say that in many of the songs. Storytime Jam, one of them.
Dangerous free thinkers. My way of looking at it has always been, what is thought? If, you know, if it's not free, then how can you actually even call it thought? What it boils down to, it's half thought. You know, so you're only looking at and daring to explore or approach half of the picture rather than see the wider scope of things. So bottom line, of course, it's quite obvious to me, I'm sure to many others as well, perhaps a few in our listening audience, as well as even you yourself, Thomas, that it's free thinking, you know, real open-mindedness is it can be at many times a threat to the powers that be in whatever context or situation we happen to be looking at. So,
well, the establishment fears a person that actually applies critical thinking, a person that can look beyond the pogroms and such, that can look beyond the brainwashing that's found in media, just walking down the street, the billboards you come across and such. If you can actually fight against those on the mental level and think for yourself, even if you're parallel to what others are thinking at the time as well, at least it's a choice you made. At least it's your own thoughts. One thing I always like to point out is that, you know, is slavery or death. Like you said earlier, give me liberty or give me death. And it's the same thing here. And some people, many people, do willingly enslave themselves for comfort. But I was raised to think about it a bit differently. You know what I mean? I'm willing to fight for my freedom, for my ability to think for myself, to express myself. And even though my parents turned on that when I turned 18, let's not go in there. I'd still like to think that everything they taught me, from my Americanisms to my beliefs about fighting and self-defense and violence and freedom and such, it all does show in my work, no matter whether it's my books, my music, my scripts, whatever, you know, my poetry even. I actually have two books of poetry, and one of them, these modern times, it's incredibly worker rage based. I've done a lot of work in factories and such, you know, on the ground level. And there was one in particular who I will not name, but the first month I was working there, it was great, and then they started slicing away little things. One of those things being they apparently figured out, oh, we've been giving you an extra 15-minute break at night. We're just going to take that away now. And it's like, do you think this is going to actually improve productivity? Is this a thing you think is going to be good for the company and us? Every company I've ever worked for, on the factory levels, mind you, it eventually, no matter how good it is, it always turns to that. They start slicing away little things that have only proven to be useful and helpful to us, the workers, and then it slowly turns into a crap fest. No other words for it. I mean, well, there's worse words for it, but, you know, we're on YouTube.
Yeah, the micromanagement problem where the managers are just blind to what it is that actually helps to make workers happier and operations generally run smoother, and not having those channels of communication open where they're listening to what employees are saying as far as what helps to boost morale and really help to make their day and improve productivity, as well as, once again, just the general overall day-to-day running of
the machine.
Exactly. There you go. So it's better to die on your feet as a free man, standing on your feet as a free man, than living on your knees as a slave. So
die with your boots on, friend. Die with your boots on.
Right. Pirates and a lot of the crew members that that I talk to on from time to time here on the Robin Hood definitely do share in those sentiments. So yeah. So Jimmy Clark, I'm not sure if you're much of a reggae kind of guy. If you've myself, I'm pretty much open to all sorts of music. If it's good, it's fucking good. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about too. I'm not much of a headbanger or heavy metal kind of dude, but Motorhead, you know, and Lemmy, the guy was,
yeah.
And I was listening to your some of the power chords and the riffs and the phrasing and the way that you guys had your materials structured and put together. And I actually can hear your lyrics and the singing too, which is great or
good.
Some people might call it screaming, but that's fine. You're just artists expressing themselves. So how would you categorize the music exactly? Was it really like speed metal?
It's funny that you mentioned this. One of the best things about the band, about Anubis Unit, is that everybody who listens to our stuff, even our older stuff, with our the demo album that we put out before the debut album, people take away what they want from it, and that's great. Officially, we are hard rock, heavy metal, punk, like all three. That's a delicious orgy, a wonderful stew pot of styles. And if you listen to each of the songs, while there is a consistent thread in there, and it's even stronger in the second album we're doing right now, even then, I mean, you can still hear the varying differences in each song and how each one has its own individual package. And that's a wonderful thing. We also have zombie prom rock in there, which not a lot of people do, and get us confused for horror punk, which is also okay. If you think it sounds like 80s thrash metal, if you think it sounds like 90s speed punk, or there's grungy elements to it, or whatever have you, then that's a good thing in my opinion. That's what we're trying to accomplish in that sense. If you can take away from it and it stays with you, then we have done our jobs as artists. You know what I mean? If we stay with you like that. The best way I've heard it described, though, is, what was it? Iron Maiden meets Trivium with Dead Kennedys vocals and Gwar presentation. You can definitely hear the Gwar effects in there as far as the storyline to it and the characterization that goes on. Yeah.
Why don't we cue up one of your songs on that note? Just you fire away there, and whichever tune it is exactly that you'd like the world to hear a little more of. I'm not sure if this is a world first or if you've had a chance to share any of your music elsewhere on various independent radio stations, podcasts, or like, but fire away there, and what do you want to hear? We'll cue it up there and get you to mute yourself and rock out here for a couple minutes with Pirate Radio Podcast and Anubis Unit.
I have shared it before with the world, and of course it is out there for free on YouTube and Spotify, but, you know, this is a first for WPRPN, for good old Pirate Radio Network here, so why don't we go with African Rage? That's always a good strong one to come out the gate with.
Let's cue that up before we do. I guess you were telling me there in the pre-interview just last night, your father is African-American, your mom is Caucasian, and there's a bit of a story behind this that you might want to just add a little bit of flavor or context and setting things up.
In the storyline of Anubis Unit, African Rage is one of our first baser power-ups where we just get super, super pissed off and then beat up demons and angels. Seriously, that's the only story for that. Being a African American, though, in real life, you know, a lot of people like to have their own opinion about what race should be and is. Lord knows you and I even talked about this yesterday. When it comes down to it, though, I am me, and I can only be defined by how I define myself. And yeah, there will be the more public I go, the more my star rises, there will be all sorts of people weighing in on it. I mean, hell, I got like 30,000 people on Twitter, and already there's some people that, like, the moment they heard African, they're like, yeah, you're African. I'm like, thanks, I already knew that. I made a song about it. So ultimately, this is just me, you know? I am a African American, and that's the way I roll. Now, the government has its view on it. The black people have their view on it. White people have their view on it. Ultimately, my own opinion of myself is all that matters to me. To my own self be true. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Also, I get really mad very easy. I'm a rager, so but I do control it. I don't just lose it.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. So
that's my secret. I'm always mad.
All right, folks. African Rage from Anubis Unit. Check this out. Enjoy.
See, that was the perfect time to do it. All right, we're sitting in sync. Let's do this.
Reality! I fall for the trap and I'll be there!
Go. African Rage from Anubis Unit's debut album, or I guess CD is what they're generally known as these days, 21st century. Internet Terrorist. So why don't you tell us a little bit about the project? I know there's like, I think around 16, 17 cuts or tracks that you managed to put together. How long did it take? Where did you record? What kind of a budget were you working with?
Believe it or not, we did this all on a budget of like, I don't even remember exactly if it was $600 or $800, but we got one of the best deals from a local producer, a good friend of ours now, Mike Cloud of Feng Shui Productions, Feng Shui Studios, excuse me. And we actually did it at his location. It was just, it took us like a month because even though we are completely committed to our project, of course, but we also still have to pay the bills, so we still have day jobs because nobody knows we exist. But then again, nobody knows that they have the mask of the drone on, and that's what part of what we're doing. We're bringing the power of the choice to you. Choose to leave it on or take it off and think for yourself, to be yourself, to stop following what everyone tells you to be like, what the news media, what the media in general tells you to be like, all that good mess. That's pretty much the basic storyline of Anubis Unit in a nutshell right there, actually. but it took us about, I think, I want to say 2 months or so. We really went in there and went at each song as best we could. So there was a lot of meeting up at his place, which is like two cities away, but it was so worth it. I mean, you heard yourself the production values for what we really paid for it. Oh my God, we got like several thousand dollars worth of good stuff here. Now, you mentioned 16 to 17 tracks, and some of these aren't in exactly tracks as they're seeds of lore, so to speak. Storytime Jam isn't a normal song. It's meant to be lore-based and provide a foundation for the storyline of the lore stuff that's coming up in the next album and every album from there. The intro, the prologue, is an incredibly important piece of lore there. Each album will start with a different character doing the prologue, and if you look at our gig videos, which is on our YouTube, and you can also find that out, of course, at www.anubisunit.com. For the most part, yeah, it was just an incredible experience altogether, and I can honestly say that, you know, I have an album. We have an album. You know, not a lot of people can say that.
In the music industry as well, especially at the independent level, it's tough. You got a lot of people out there struggling, a lot of great talent, of course, and that's really one of the things that we work to and are happy to showcase here from time to time. We've got our third, I believe, as was mentioned earlier, the Minds World Indie Music Showcase coming up. Yeah, it's tough, you know, to keep a band together and to really have things gel and work. But it's interesting too, because I was talking to you. I mean, you've got a really kind of hard rocking, hard driving, in your face kind of style. You're not really much of a, you're kind of more of a teetotaler, I guess, than a real kind of speed freak or like a pothead or anything like that, which reminded me for our discussion, just the brief, you know, pre-interview we did last night, is Penn Jillette, same kind of deal.
The
famous Las Vegas, now primarily based magician, who, you know, very much into music and was own little group together there, I guess, and whatnot on an indie kind of level. But he's never touched a single, I guess, drug really of any kind other than maybe Tylenol, I suppose. No weed or booze. Well, or
ibuprofen, yeah. Honestly, and this is just to be pointed out there, I don't want to jack a line from Charlie Sheen, but I don't need to do drugs. I am drugs. Seriously, knowing me in the backstage is an experience, and I mean, look at what I'm involved right now. No normal human, I mean, most normal people will focus on one project at a time. I've got a new book that my editor is working on for free, and thank you, Elizabeth Robbins, for that, because I am flat broke, but which is why I'm friggin' I can't afford marketing. But, you know, I've got books that I'm working on. I still have to add 20 pages to the script, but I wrote a script last year. I do poetry. I do lyrics. Heck, I'm writing a new song for Anubis Unit right now. Cannibalize Your Kids. We're gonna name it. Yes, we went there. That was it. It's a concept I'm working on. It's good.
That's a pretty provocative title, as you might imagine. Maybe that's why you've got it laid out in that way. Do you literally mean that you're trying? Are you trying to promote and encourage parents to start eating their children?
Jesus, no. This is just a song. Okay, here's the one thing I do got to point out. I do understand where you're going with this, though. With our music, there are, I guess you could say, three kind of songs: lore-based songs, which helps forward the storyline of Anubis Unit with each album. Then you have the actual, we have a meaning to this song, like Mean Measures of Today, for instance, where we do call out, you know, there is money in chaos, there is money in violence, there is money in race, you know, all this other stuff. And then you've got the party songs, which is calm down, it's just for fun, that's why we're doing that song. And some people would say that that's not good to do an album like that, that, oh, you should only be nothing but party or super serious, but you know, nah, bruh, we're gonna do this our way, you can eat it. You can eat a whole bag of Grunch, just saying. Put a little ranch on it. So the whole Yes We Went There song, which that was called Yes We Went There, which, yeah, the lyrics are cannibalize your kids, cannibalize your effing kids, cannibalize your kids, one less effing mouth to feed. So, you know, that one's, I mean, come on, we're not telling people, you know, yeah, go eat your kids. No, that one's one of our party songs. That's one of our messed up, like 1,200 pounds of Pinono. Like, you've heard that one, right?
Yeah, that's one of your tracks, yes, the internet terrorist release.
Exactly. Yeah, this song is definitely one of those ones where, no, we're not, no, this one's not a serious one.
Some people might be triggered by the provocative title, especially given, you know, the context of the recent spirit cooking scandal and debacle, which in turn ties into, you know, this business of Pizzagate, although really, I think should myself personally more accurately be, you know, hashtag Pedogate. I'm not sure if you even care to comment on that, but have you heard of the spirit,
cooking? Brought it up. Let's do this. Okay. I'm not ever denying that there is pedophiles in politics. For the love of God, anybody who follows my feeds, whether I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, no, I will hella call out fools, and especially politicians, especially in Hollywood. I don't even care if it's hurting our sales and our exposure, our visibility, whatever. No, fight evil. No matter where it is. Fight hypocrisy no matter where it is. Especially if it's coming from yourself. So these fools that are, don't even get me twisted, don't even get it started. Every time a Republican freaking gets outed, it's a good day. Every time a Democrat gets outed, people expect it. I don't know why, actually. But, you know, no, I'm fiercely independent when it comes to many things, and this is one of those things. Now, with all that stated, wasn't Pizzagate hella debunked, though? I could have sworn that was severely debunked. I'm just saying, I don't doubt that spirit cooking goes on. I don't doubt that Moloch is an actual demonic entity and force when it comes to Hollywood and when it comes to politics. But that Pizzagate that one pizza parlor, you know what I'm talking about. That one was debunked, dude. A guy went in there with a gun, started waving it around, and there is no basement. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah, we'll leave that aside for now. I was just throwing that out there to see what kind of conversation we might be able to generate for a few moments. So, but I mean, of course, we could go on at great length and eat up a lot of time with Pizzagate. But that's why what my point was, though, is that it's hashtag Pedogate. And especially the context, as you say, Hollywood, man, all roads lead to Rome, too. Let's not forget with the Vatican and so forth. But just now that you mention it within the context, not just of eating your children, but touching them in all the wrong places for all the wrong reasons. We also, just in the pre-interview, one of the topics that just kind of came up was this whole thing of how it was Hearts Progress was the name of this outfit, which I guess ties back to NAMBLA in some way.
Oh, God.
And so on and so forth. It all blew up on Minds a couple, you know, months ago. Did you pick up on that or follow much of that at all at the time that it was all kind of things were going totally crazy?
Admittedly, I have been busy as all get out, and at one point in time, I was facing homelessness. So that was a little bit more important to me at the time, you know, priority-wise. But that's not to say that I did not see this issue that came up that Minds is harboring pedophiles and such. And that was a pretty explosive topic. That was a really explosive topic for a bit. I don't know if it's still, quote-unquote, hot right now or anything. But we did talk about that yesterday, but that's more of a discussion that we should save later on in the after party, because if I remember correctly, that one ate up like half an hour of us just talking about that.
This is really interesting. You know, some people here are saying that we've got, you know how we did not exactly get off to the greatest start there today. Apparently, we're driving a lot of traffic here to profane outburst. It's YouTube is doing us the kind favor of looping all these F-bombs, and we got listeners saying it's stuck on this this loop, so that's unfortunate, and we will be sharing that link here with others, and as well as trying to multitask and delete. I did not want to delete our live stream here, of course. We're trying to produce and present this show with you today. Thomas Duder, of course, Bellingham, Washington-based independent musician, frontman for the hard-rocking thrash. Hopefully not offend, you know, if that's the right title or not. That's the best I can come up with. Tell you the truth, just I'm not part of the scene, but at the same time, man, when I hear good music, I can appreciate it. And that's one of the reasons that we got you on the show, is I gave your tunes a listen just before we even invited you. I was like, oh, that's pretty good. You know, I like that. So what can you tell us, though, of the Motorhead influence? Because I know, I'm guessing that your comrades and, brothers in arms there, as a lot of people within the heavy metal community did, you know, look to Lemmy and Motorhead as an inspiration. Would that be the same case for you?
You know, when it comes to the band, which by all means, I have no offense if you label us as thrash, speed, punk, whatever. We're heavy metal, hard rock, punk is the holy trinity of the ultimate sound sought by God. So I'm just saying. But when it comes to this, though, we have a wonderful grab bag of inspirations. First and foremost, never get it twisted. This is Anubis Unit. This is what we do. We have a voice. And we're very lucky, almost, but definitely it takes quite a bit of skill and a lot of group work to get our voice, you know what I mean? But despite that, there are inspirations behind that. Now, when it comes to Motorhead, certainly Motorhead is in my background, but for the most part, I think I'm, like, maybe my drummer is the only other one that even listens to Motorhead ever. So, just saying. In our music, it usually starts with me writing down the song, but because I'm musically illiterate, I can't read or write sheet music or tablature or anything, you know what I mean? So what I do is I'll just write out the lyrics, I'll balance it out, make certain that each lyric fits in the riff that's in my head, the beats and riffs, and then we gather together at practice, and then we go into what's known as the lab, with us at least. I don't know of any other band that calls it that, whatever. But that's when we start doing our researching, you know what I mean? We'll pick out, I'll do like a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da kind of a thing with my, the da-da-da-da's, as we've joked about it on our page. And usually it's up to my guitarist and my drummer especially to translate what I'm talking about into actual instrument noises to make the music. But you've heard the outcome of what we do. Our fastest song took us like 1 week from writing to production, literally. When it comes to some of the other songs, yeah, like one of the hardest songs we're having a trouble memorizing is Nub. Which, funny story, and I've heard this from other vocalists, lyricists, too, just because you write the song doesn't mean you've memorized the lyrics, you know what I mean? And in my case, especially, from whatever darkness that's inside of my head, I just write down these lyrics, and then it's up to me to go from there, you know what I mean, to further refine it. Once it's ready, I present it to the band, and then together, we germinate that seed of destruction into a garden of slaughter. Or something. Take it for what you will.
Oh, I fully understand and follow what you're saying as far as writing a song and then not being able to remember the lyrics. A lot of the big, well-established names, it's the same kind of deal. Thank God for modern technology. It seems that we got a lot of them with their teleprompters there on stage, little cheat sheets with the lyrics streaming across to them electronically that they're able to kind of take a peek at and just remind them of.
Are you ready for some opinions? Are you ready for an opinion?
That's what you're here for, man. That's what you're here for.
Okay, I have read about this phenomenon. I've read about what you're talking about, singers with a teleprompter. Oh my God, that is so dishonorable. That ain't even right. My thing is, okay, as an artist, when we're on stage, we're there to give our everything, you know what I mean? We should be devoted to the craft. And that's kind of against the craft. You know what I mean? And don't be telling me, oh, this so-and-so's got 80 songs. You know who has 80 songs? Motorhead, Rolling Stones. These are fools I would expect would need a teleprompter. Madonna, even. I'm not even that much about pop music. But for the love of God, she's been doing stuff since what, the 70s? No, the 80s? Like, that's a person that you would need a teleprompter. I'm certain that at some point in time, around Anubis Unit's 5th or 7th album, I might need a teleprompter, because that would be, let's say, 13 songs per. That's like, what, 90 songs I'd have to memorize and remember at any point in time? Now, on the other hand, I'm willing to do it because I apply myself, whether it be memorizing the lyrics, how it feels and fit with the beat, the way I synchronize the band. You know, each song, once again, has its own thing, so we can't just smear it, you know what I mean? Each song has its own individual soul, and we have to give expression to that on the stage. So yeah, these people that are going on there with the teleprompters, oh my God, put some ranch on it, sit and spin. Don't even get me started on that. Weakness! You are weak!
Tom Petty, RIP. Godspeed, Tom. Thank you for all your great music over the years. But I think just last week caught him in one of the videos that, of course, were archived and you can find up on YouTube, using a little bit of kind of the cheat sheet kind of deal there with the teleprompter. But I wanted to bring his name up because, once again, we were this is something you know a little bit about, but just look, it's interesting to note the timing of these two people's deaths, Tom Petty and Ralphie May. And I know you have an interest and something of a, well, you basically, you know, stand-up comedy is one of your things. You've, I guess, done a little bit of performance from time to time in the past, but that Ralphie May, once again, having just kicked the bucket here this past week along with Tom Petty, in my mind, it was like Ralphie just couldn't stand to live without Tom, and it's like, I can't believe Tom Petty has died. I'm out of here. This is too much. I can't handle this, you know? So, yeah.
I'm going to listen to some good music.
Tom, contrary-wise, was such a huge fan of Ralphie's. Like, dude, get the hell on up here. I need a little more entertainment. You know, up in the
sky. That kind of turns it into a horror movie if you think about it, though. If that Tom Petty killed Ralphie May.
Well, no, but it's interesting, too. They both died of the same, pretty much, cardiac arrest was the deal. And word on the street, I guess, is that with Petty, is it was an Oxycontin overdose, is what the rumor is. Whether it's true or not, who knows? No idea, but that's what we're hearing here, the rumblings in the underground.
I can believe it, though. I mean, the man did like his drugs. Oh, who was I going to mention? We were just, and also the other, a little bit of synchronization. You have Thomas Duder on your show, and we're talking about Tom Petty. Funny story, as in Anubis Unit, I do have a different name. There I'm a JDW, Conqueror of Hell and Prelate of Heaven, and you got to say it in all caps. It's like A Tribe Called Quest. As a writer, I'm Thomas Duder, author of The Things, though. It can get confusing for some people, but that's how I balance everything out. I mentioned earlier that I do a lot of things, you know what I mean? As a talking head or a commentator, I don't even use my real name. I'm usually That Bastard, like, you know, my Gmail, ThatBastardFB and whatnot, as well as on Twitter. And so when I'm usually doing political commentary or if I'm on a podcast or if I'm a host or a guest, usually I go on as That Bastard if I'm going on for my opinions. Malice Atreides as a gamer, Lord of the Wasteland, as a GM for the different kind of games I've pulled in the past, you know, which gaming is also very much so in my life as well as in the band's life. So, I mean, all of us are gamers at various times, you know what I mean? And it's RPGs, fighting games, all the good stuff. Doubling back really quick, because we keep derailing, and I have no trouble with that. It's always fun. It's a good time for me. But going back, you were asking about influences, and we really do have a lot of influences in our background. You know, my guitarist is definitely getting more into djent-style stuff, and that's wonderful. It's perfect for the stuff that we need for the second album, Anubis Unit versus the Necronomicons. It's going to be good when it hits. I mean, some people who've gone to our live gigs have heard versus the Necronomicons or C4, which are both from that album, and that's some of our most driving, hard, just heavy-hitting music ever. Like, some of the stuff, it's not brutal, it's not, you don't do that. You, as you mentioned earlier, you can actually hear me sing and scream, and you can actually hear the lyrics, and that's important to me personally as a writer, as well as an artist, as well as a musician, you know? Once again, for me, it's all about communication.
There's nothing more that would piss me off. Back in the day, I would go into a club to check out a band and hear what it was that they're presenting, and the goddamn lyrics, excuse my French, folks. It's like, you
could YouTube.
Get the vocalist, like, what, I mean, what the F? I dropped enough F-bombs at the start, so I'll kind of try to refrain from here on in.
I was going to say, are we up to NC-17?
Well, yeah, it's a pirate ship, so the language does get a little salty from time to time. We are pretty, you know, libertarian and whatnot. We just, it's like George Carlin talked about, though. He said there's a time and a place for the F-bombs and the salty kind of blue language, and you just got to be smart and tasteful with the way that you kind of lay it out there. And I think you yourself would probably agree. But no, the thing is, going to those clubs that so many times, like, geez, man, it's like, I cannot make out what the hell these people are saying. It's just the mix and the levels, you know, like something's, you know, sound check, hello, come on.
You know, sound guys are incredibly important. I don't care if they're free or paid or what. A sound guy can really make or break your presentation. And it's sometimes terrible when you have a bad sound guy. They don't know what they're doing. It doesn't sound good at all. And you can hear it from the stage. Oh, man, I've had some real nightmare moments. The most nightmare moment, I'm not going to name who or where, but my mic went off, like, right in the beginning. The guitar wasn't on. Like, we heard it in the monitor or whatever, but we could hear – no, that wasn't even that. It was – you couldn't hear it at all. The mic turned off afterwards when they tried to fix it, and I was, like, halfway through the prologue. They were supposed to do the prologue, and it didn't cue up at all, so we just decided to do it live right then and there, which was – what we normally do, but we're trying to move to this, you know, that gives us a more dramatic presentation when it's played, you know, over the PA. You know, it's the intro. It's the intro to the album. It's what summons Anubis units and turns us into heavy metal battle gods. That and the Rite of Ascension, but we won't talk about that. That never happens. If you've been to our live gigs, you'll see what I mean. But, yeah. Like I said, I've had some nightmare moments with that. But, you know, the show must go on, and we have yet to train wreck. You know, here in Bellingham, this place has a bad history of live bands that just break up right then and there on stage. They haven't even done, like, a full song. They just bickety-bam gone, you know? And it's like, that's not cool. We are a unit. We are a group. We feel very strongly about this altogether. And I know I'm just saying it right now, but if you ever get a chance to talk to the guys individually, they've stated this before as well. It's us against the world, and we're trying to rise as hard and as well as we can without selling our souls.
We have got around 30 minutes or so left here to go with the course of today's show. What's the next tune that you'd like to hear?
Why don't we just take it to the very final actual song of an Internet Terrorists? Why don't you cue up The Mean Measures of Today?
We got that one. Just if you want to kind of set things up for our listeners, and of course you are the primary lyricist, I guess, was there any collaboration as far as the crafting of the words was concerned, or is it just all your business? And secondly, what is the song? Is there any real, it says The Mean Measures of Today. What are we looking at there?
It's like I stated earlier, the seed of destruction starts with me. I write down this music. That's not to say that the guys don't weigh in themselves. There's been some times where I wasn't able to balance it properly, like too many syllables per line within the stanzas, within the verse or chorus or whatever have you. And usually if that happens, usually they'll make suggestions then. But it does start with me. That's my one thing. Everything that I've ever written for them, it starts off with written by Thomas Duder, author of The Things, for sole exclusive use by Anubis Unit. So that's just one of those things. But that's not to say that I made this song. I will point blank go to my grave saying, no, we did this. These songs are created by Anubis Unit for Anubis Unit. If anyone wants to cover us or use the music, hit us up. We'll talk, you know? The other thing, now The Mean Measures of Today actually has a very... This is written during a time where I was working as a telecom specialist for somebody. I won't give any names, but for a particular company. My manager was a wonderful woman, my quote-unquote lesbian friend, so she became. And they did her wrong. They did her so wrong. I have rarely seen a company do a hardworking person this bad. But it happened right in front of my eyes, and there was nothing I could do about it except write the song. And this was also during a time where there was a lot of issues going on in America at the time. And so I had to express it. I had to get it out somehow that wouldn't be violence. You know, I mentioned my violence earlier, and I also mentioned that I've never lost it without there being an actual fight or an actual reason for me to lose it. I never throw the first swing, but I am the one to throw the last. I could have walked away from that fight, but I didn't want to. Growing up and becoming a man, I've learned how to better harness that anger, that rage, that energy, you know, and I do put it into my books, which we still need to talk about my books, but my music, the music that I do with Anubis Unit, you can hear it in our music, you know, and The Mean Measures of Today is the exemplary force behind it. It's a great example. I said that wrong. It's a great example of that. So by all means, put it on, let the people listen, and if any of you walk away mad from this, good. Get mad. Rise up. Do something. Be better. Do better. And even if you're not improving and you're just living your day by day, that's cool too. At least you're living towards something. You're not just doing nothing. You're not just being nothing. No matter how much you think otherwise.
From Anubis. Anubis Units.
Thank you.
WCD release. This is the Mean Measures of Today. Measures of Today from Anubis Units debut CD release. internet terrorists.
You can admit it. You can admit it. It's good. It is damn good. Ooh, if that don't get you fired up, get up, do something, be better.
You're damn right. Yeah, that's some pretty decent shit for sure. So, who are some of your biggest punk influences?
Oh, I want to say G.G. Allin, but that's the way to get shot in some places. Seriously, I mean, G.G. Allin is great. Bite It, You Scum is one of my favorite songs from him. You know, when it comes to old school punk, you put me on the spot here, but when it comes to actually naming bands from old school punk, I was raised in, you know, I was born in 1980, so I was raised in the 90s. I got hella into grunge and metal around that time, mainly because of the waning of old school rap and the rise of gangster rap, which was what was in at the time. But, you know, I went toward more towards alt rock and heavy metal, and then just went like, I listened to Iron Maiden's Brave New World album and just, like, never came up from heavy metal. That's not to say I don't listen to other things. In fact, I think I mentioned in my most recent vlog today, in fact, I mentioned that I've been really listening to a lot of Catatonia. But when it comes to – and, of course, The Birthday Massacre. But when it comes to old school punk, I mean, man, if it's from the 70s to the 90s, I'd probably do it. But trying to name a single band right now,
well,
sorry.
How about Henry Rollins, frontman for Black Flag?
Does that count? Does Henry Rollins count?
I have no idea. He seems to be a big deal. Maybe he's a little too mainstream.
I don't think Henry Rollins will ever truly be mainstream. The man does talk a good game, and he's got the muscle to back it up. I mean, I've heard his spoken word stuff, though, and it is amazing.
Oh, he's a smart guy for sure, very capable and creative. I'm not sure about his sexuality. There's an issue. Not that that is a – well, in some quarters it is. I mean, it's a talking point worth discussing because it's come up a time or two throughout social media, some of the interviews that he's done. In fact, I think it might have been on the Howard Stern show or something like that where he was asked about this. Why it is he's never married, or I don't know if he's ever had a girlfriend or anything. I'm not sure if he's gay necessarily. He just – you've heard the term asexuality. Maybe he's one of the
You know, I'm just going to point it out since it did come up. I myself am openly bisexual. But the problem is, and here's the funny part, my gay friends apparently have point blank told me that I'm apparently not gay enough to be bi. And I'm just like, well, that's erasing. Thank you. That's pretty fucked. But then again, my thing is also, and I keep it very simple, if they're pretty enough for me to take home from the club and they look good in that skirt, they're going to be feeling like a woman by the time I'm done with them. So there's that.
All right.
A lot of people think I'm more dominant than I actually am, but it's because I'm actually more aggressive than I am dominant, you know? But at the same time, hey, if that's what gets you laid, I ain't even going to trip about that. If that's what makes you happy, all right, we're doing some things. I'm going to make you breakfast in the morning.
That's what helps to get your rocks off, I suppose, is what you're kind of getting at there. So speaking of Henry Rollins, the cult of personality, this is one of the talking points, one of the issues that came up once again. In the pre-interview, so I thought it was well worth addressing. I'm not sure if we have really are on the same page as far as this whole business is concerned, but would you care to comment? What are your thoughts, or when you hear the term cult of personality, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Like Mussolini and James Dean. You know, there is an honest to goodness. I mentioned Moloch earlier, and there is an honest to goodness society within our pop culture, within the business of entertainment, you know, and it's true. But even though I recognize this, and this, it'd probably be the easiest thing to just sell out, give up my soul and give up our souls and just, you know, acquire wealth and go from there. We are going the hard route. We're going the hard route. Would I want to work with a company? Yes, of course I would. We'll work with a label. So long as they don't tell us change this music or change your presentation, if they're going to support us in the fight, then they're an ally. You know what I mean? The cult personality in and of itself. And I even talked to you about this in our conversation yesterday. You know, as my star rises, I don't think I will ever be corrupted in that sense. Everything that I've ever been, I put out there in the first 5 minutes. As long as I can stay true to myself without even backsliding a little bit on my beliefs and my self-evaluation and self-worth, that to me is worth more than anything else. The riches will come. Fame will come. Money will come. And yeah, they are going to be coming so hard with me. I got these 9 penis tentacles. Somebody's coming. Well, really 7 are usable for sex, but whatever. Ultimately, the cult personality are those people that just enter into the almost nigh immortal, you know, groupthink, so to speak, of the masses, you know? Once again, Mussolini, James Dean, Gandhi, Marilyn Monroe, these are names that most Americans certainly, and people outside of America, have heard of. You know, icons that will live on for at least a couple thousand years. But at what cost? I mean, look what happened with each one of these people. And it's not even a matter of whether or not they died, you know, violently, or even like how Tom Petty went into the night through, you know, gently, I would even say, even if it was Oxycontin, it sounds like he just passed out and died, you know? Same thing with Ralphie May. But there's certainly people who have died harder deaths than them, but they all die. I mean, there's even such a thing as, what was it, the under 21 club, you know? Suicide and violent deaths and just dying in general before they've even really truly given what I believe to be their peak performances. You know, the prime example of this, Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee's definitely died, and there's so many conflicting even conspiracies revolving him. And who knows what he could have created in the time that he could have lived from then to now, you know, if he was still alive today. Martin Luther King Jr. There's so many names you just throw out there, and some people, like most people, like memes before the internet, except they were alive and, you know.
Well, William S. Burroughs, where we are all here to go, and very concise and to the point, and that it's a 27 club, I believe, is what you are referencing. Uh-huh. I'm not sure if Hank Williams was part of that group. Amy Winehouse, Kurt Cobain, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, who was murdered by his manager, if people want to look into that. That's kind of the deal, apparently. Mm-hmm. Jim Morrison and so on and so forth. But you talked about what it means to be a writer. We opened the show actually with a great quote from you.
Is it Robert Heinlein?
Well, I'm not sure. No, I think it was actually your own. Basically,
yeah, that's me.
It's along the same sort of lines and sharing the same sort of sentence as what William S. Burroughs himself did through. This is one of the great audio archive lectures that people can find that he gave out of Naropa University, which is a Boulder, Colorado-based institution. That was during the mid-80s, I believe, is when the talk was held. But what you said is forget the drama of writing, forget the politics of writing, forget even the rest of the industry. Writers should write. Period. And that's Burroughs. His thoughts were that writers are born. You know, you don't really become a writer so much as you're just born a writer, and you feel it within your essence and soul to the deepest parts of your being to express yourself. You know, taking the pen and putting it to paper and getting those words out there. I guess in the more kind of contemporary 21st century high digital age, it's a question of blogging and so forth. So maybe adding a few comments here and there or what have you from time to time in various internet forums.
But I can definitely comment on this. You know, although I would still say pen and paper still is a strong step for just about anybody. But I feel what you're saying that, yeah, digitally speaking, we have Wattpad now. We've always had LiveJournal. Even DeviantArt is a good outlet for writers and such. But you know, it's like I stated in that phrase, which yeah, that's mine, that's me, that's quoting me. Writers should write. You know, before I did the YouTube show, Haymakers and Hellhounds, it was originally a TEDx talk idea where one of the things I like to point out is that it is the ultimate heretical act to write. Writing in and of itself is the greatest strike one can take against death and against the world even. Where others may cower, a person can anonymously write the words that are needed to make a people rise against their tyrants, you know? And there's power there. There is power there, a very palpable power, very tangible, very strong. And it's one of those things where, yeah, if I can encourage more people to write, no matter how good or how bad they are, it's like you said earlier, it's like Burroughs said, you know, it is in our soul. It's right there. Like we were talking about how I was mentioning yesterday, I mentioned how violence is the nature of mankind, and so is expression. It's always expression. There's a reason why it's called martial arts, you know what I mean? Same thing here. You know, no matter what kind of artistic expression it is, but writing, yeah, it's like my website says, the pen is as powerful as one's sword. Admittedly, mine also has a double entendre in it because, you know, www.thepenismysword.com, but you get it. Ultimately, it does come down to that. You should just write, period. You can suck all you want. It can be as bad as you think it's going to be. As long as you write it and get it out. Get it out of you. You know what I mean? Vomit it forth onto the page, no matter where it is, blogging, in the comments section, over there on YouTube, which I wish I can see you guys. I apologize, but I do have crappy internets. I should have mentioned that earlier. So I gotta, if I'm on Skype, I gotta be only on Skype. So sorry about that. But you feel me on this though, right, Jaffe? I mean, this is one of those things. It's not just about the writing, and it's not even just that it's in your soul. It's the expression of it. It's getting it out. It's communication. And that is the most pure form of communication, in my opinion. You know?
Being the bi sort of leaning character that you are, I'm not sure how much I really want to feel you on this one, but, we can.
You don't sound.
You know, but
like, you don't sound like you look good in a skirt.
You could probably find a few other crew members that might want to feel you a little more closely. But,
who wants to ride on Daddy's lap?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Don't touch that tentacle. That's the mean one.
Big thanks to people that have, of course, been tuning in, listening to today's presentation. Joe 333, Pirate Joe Eminon, based out of Long Island, New York, just recently dropped in. So, Faceless Troll out of Orillia, Ontario. And, of course, Emily Anderson. Sorry, folks, for the big flub up, the cosmic giggle, as it were, that we had kind of tripping us up here at the start of today's classic Friday the 13th show. So them's the breaks, kids. We need a little more help as far as technical production is concerned, unfortunately. But listen, we haven't had much of a chance to talk about the Generalist series to this point. We are kind of winding things down here. Maybe another, we could carry things along here, I'm sure, for the next 15 minutes or so, approximately. Probably nothing more than that, really. But why don't you talk a little bit then, if you would, about your, speaking of writing, Generalist series, some of the book signings that you've done and how successful you've been to this point, managing to find an audience and so on and so forth.
Well, just saying, you could always also bring me back on another show if you want. If you like what you've heard and you like, you know, talking with me and whatnot, hey, bring me back on sometime in an official capacity as a writer. I don't mind that I am involved with a lot of projects, so I don't mind blowing about any single one of them and devoting a whole show to it. Just saying. Hit me up sometime, we'll talk about it, yeah? As far as the Gene Rawlist, the Generalist is my Vanguard series. When I decided to go pro, this was what I did, was the Generalist. It's an action-adventure urban fantasy romp through a neo-Los Angeles of near tomorrow. It originally started as 2017 until we hit 2017, and then during the re-release, I just called it 20XX. Because I learned why you don't do the near future, because like, now it doesn't look so good anymore now that we're there. No, I write a good fight. That's what I do. I write great violence, great action sequences, you know. And I do also present a lot of the misadventures I had back in California as a demon hunter, amongst other things that I've been involved with. And it shows. It actually comes up in The Generalist. Now, Frank Todd, the main character, The Generalist himself, is certainly not my stand-in. I do have a Gary Stu stand-in in this series, in this multiverse. But The Generalist is just a fraction of what I have for this multiverse called Extreme Existence. You know, Robert A. Heinlein, Michael Moorcock, Zelazny, McCaffrey, these are the names that have inspired me when it comes to interdimensional stuff, you know, when it comes to writing this kind of thing. And I am about those that have inspired me. Stephen Barnes, you know? I mean, I've read such wonderful writers growing up that when I decided to start writing, you can tell, you know? I get compared a lot to Neil Gaiman and even Kim Harrison, which are both excellent writers. I love them so much as a reader, you know? And ultimately, I think that's also important. You can't just be a writer and not have the love of books and reading in yourself. I mentioned earlier I have two books of poetry. There's Modern Times, but then there's also one that's really dark and negative. It's called Minus. And I actually go off on a little gush in there about how much, you know, I have this love affair of the written language and I'm cheating on it with my audience. You know? It's one of those things where ultimately, that's just what the writing is about to me. And The Generalist is my very first right-out-the-gate, overhead, right straight. This is as hard as I could come out, you know, and just do it. And I've been going since then, you know. Currently, there's 5 official books now. Funny story, I was actually officially published for, like, 9 months. But then I had to revert back because they didn't even do a real contract. So that was it was a mess. I won't give any names. I won't name anyone. But it was like 9 months of my life was waylaid by that, so I'm kind of behind. But because of that, I had the first two books I had out, that is Cliché of Memories, Taboo Zero, and Taboo One, Where's the Beef, got combined into what is now Taboo Zero Double Show. So I technically have six books in the Generalist series, counting the Omnibus Generalis, which is a collection of all of them. But the Generalist itself follows a paranormal goods and supernatural services store known as The Shop, set in the heart of Neo Los Angeles. This is set in a world where after the havoc of 2012, all sorts of paranormal phenomenon gets ramped up. Energy levels of all across the board get spiked. Every single god and goddess, every pantheon ever worshipped, all activate all at the same time. And in the middle of all this, secret societies are jockeying for greater power against each other. The government comes forth with like old contracts from the Knights Templar, you know, to even older creatures and such that are backing them now. And everybody's fighting over artifacts and such. And in the meantime, people are also transmogrifying into monsters. The monster gene templates that have been like undiluted just within their genes this whole time are suddenly activating and going into cannibalistic rampages. In the center of all of this, you have the misadventures of the number one bully boys, thugs, kneecappers, bouncers, bounty hunters, The Shop. That would be Frank the Generalist Todd and Daniel Dash Hopkins, who is the Ungrim Troll. Much like other trolls, he's green and scaly and such, but and he has regenerative powers. But his scales, he has greater control over, and there's certain other things. That's why he's known as the Ungrim Troll. You know, like Grimm Brothers. You know, so there's like the troll is already a rare monster template, but the Ungrim Troll is he's the only one known. So it goes right off the bat from the Amnesia storyline from a first person point of view in Cliché of Memories, but then it goes from there into the standard, into the what should be the proper form throughout the rest of the series. And the violence just gets better as the series progresses. The very first one, Where's the Beef, is a great introduction to the mafia world that they work with, the monster mob, and having to take on as another gang that are jockeying for a higher position in there. In the Mayhem Saga, it's all about the Order of Magi and their issues, what's going on with them, where Frank used to be a Magus. You know, he used to be amongst their order. Frank is right off the bat, right in the very first book, is presented that he has had like a crap ton of masters, and there are reasons for this. There's reasons why the FBI Spook Squad, the ipso facto AmeriFed government representatives for anything supernatural and paranormal, there's a reason why they're following him everywhere with a frag bullet, you know, with his name on it. So yeah, there's all these reasons that are in there, and I do present it as you go along. There's also an overarching storyline considering the four heroes of Paris. Was it five? Five heroes of Paris, excuse me. And a particular thing that they had to face off against there, which plays into Frank's backstory. There is a quote-unquote, as I've heard it before, thriving backstory to this series. And it's always – it just warms my trollish, dead, cold, black heart every time I hear that. You know, it's just like, oh, I love you. I can't help but – just, you know, I'm easy. I'm honestly an easy date. Tell me you like my books or my music, and okay, you're good with me. Just saying.
Well, and the thing is, you know, it's art as well as things like stand-up comedy. There's so many subjective things in the world. This just happens to be one of them. Movies, food, whether you find someone attractive or not, and so on and so forth. It's also subjective as far as any of this is concerned. But, yeah, I mean, I have not had a chance to really sink my teeth into any of your books, per se, not to this point. But the music, definitely. How about audio books? Have you looked at doing or recording an audiobook version of anything out of your Generalist series?
Okay. So, first things first, really quick. You mentioned earlier about audience. And first and foremost, I go for anybody who likes reading violence. That's literally what I'm writing. I'm not trying to put forth that, oh, he's a black character, so you should support him because he's black. No, Frank Todd is a curmudgeon. I mean, he's a terrible person. He's an anti-hero of the best type, in my opinion. You know, he's very much a Byronic anti-hero in that sense. And Dash is a little nicer, but it's not saying much. But the thing is, I have this weird cloak of obscurity. No matter what I have done in the past, I rarely get read. I've moved 10,000 units, and that's physical copy, digital copy, through all three services that I go through, Amazon, CreateSpace, and Smashwords. But 8,000, if not 9,000 of those units are all the free book. And even though I've gotten 25 reviews, and some people would look at this and say, well, that's a success. You're a success. People have read you, and they've left reviews. But 9,000 out of 10,000 units moved, I only got 25 reviews. Like, the industry hurts If you don't have money for marketing and exposure, if you don't have somebody bigger vetting you, if you're not – especially as an indie, oh my god, no. It is terrible out there. It is tough in these streets, my bro. For real. Now, you were asking about audiobooks, and this plays into what I've done. You know, I've tried doing an audiobook 3 times in the past. Recorded through – you mentioned OBS, and I think that was the – that might not be – no, I think it was Bandicam that I used. But I've recorded 3 times here on Skype. I've even gotten some of these recordings, at least a group read that I did on my YouTube channel. But the audiobook level recordings using this very Blue Snowball microphone, every single time I have done a audiobook on my own, something bad happens. Once the computer just died, the whole thing just died, so I had to get a new computer like a month later because I'm broke and I'm poor. The second time, Windows 10 killed my Windows 8 and it tried to forcibly upgrade. Like, I literally got this weird message saying Microsoft Windows is trying to, you know, do something. I'm like, what? And then it's just blue screen. And the third one, I think my Dropbox died or something. I don't even remember what happened with the third one, but at that point in time I said, you know, I think the universe is telling me I need to not do this on my own. Someone else is going to have to do this damn thing. So I feel you on the audiobooks, and trust me, I have one of the reasons why I came to Minds.com was a trucker friend of mine came to Minds.com, was telling me, oh, dude, you got to come down here. It's so good. You know, you're going to find so many free thinkers that are going to check you out and follow you. And I'm posting my free book over there, and I'm still barely getting found, you know. I have like 100,000 views on Minds.com, but it's not like I have a lot of subscribers from it or people following or funneling into anything else I'm doing, you know. But we'll see. We'll see. I also don't rush these things. I accept that part. But as far as audiobooks, my good man, I've done that 3 times, and I think the fourth one would kill me. And while I like Ralphie May and I like Tom Petty, I do not want to die so soon. I have so much more work to do. I really do. I have like 25 arcs to do in The Generalist alone. We have at least 5 albums to do in Anubis Unit to do the whole storyline of it. You know what I mean? Card game and video games that I'm also developing on the side for The Generalist and supporting my stuff. I have more poetry to do and lyrics to do. I've got the YouTube thing I got to finish out. I have at least 5 seasons, 9 episodes each planned for Haymakers and Hellhounds, teaching my writing style. My friend, I thank you for the idea of the audiobooks, and I know that's where the money is, but I don't want to die. Please don't kill me.
Oh, I hear you. Busy guy with a lot on your plate. We know all about that for sure.
Yeah.
Equally the case here with the WPRPN project and all of its the demands, and essentially what we're looking at here, the vision and sub projects and affiliate ideas and so forth that we are working on better promoting and getting off the ground. So a few things that quickly, we don't really have much time here, but we're hoping to talk to you about. You do have a podcast, I guess, of sorts. You have Ask Me Anything segment, which I thought was pretty cool as well. Came across that recently on YouTube, and I think that's something definitely worth keeping afloat if you can and seeing where that goes. But how long's that been around?
Well, the Ask Me Anything is something that's done on like Reddit and like other places, you know. But I just decided to do that for my third vlog because why not, you know? And even more so, I do have – now, questions, the chance to submit questions ended on Wednesday, but I'll be doing this again just because it's good copy. It's good content. I got quite a few interesting questions. You know, I have this one super fan, KK, and if she's listening, sup, baby girl? And she's incredible. She's bought the physical copy of our signed album, which you can get on eBay. And, you know, she's checked out my books. She's been buying my books. She supports my stuff, and I wish I had like 1,000 more people like her. I really do. I do try to be worthy of such adoration, too. And she does adore my work, and it's great. Wait, what was I talking about? I just derailed so hard, I forgot.
Ask Me Anything.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So the Ask Me Anything, she actually asked, like, 3 questions, and one of them, I'm like, I know that song. It's that Vitas guy that guy, you know, that song?
I cannot, actually, well, can't
I'll
say that I do.
I'll assault you with it later.
No.
So she's hitting me up with that, and, you know. And the Ask Me Anything, like I said, I did have at least a couple of honestly serious questions, but beyond that, nah. And it's all about the exposure, you know. The more people who follow me, the more who's checking out my stuff, the more they'll engage with me and do with me, supposedly. But the problem is marketing theory doesn't really work with me, and that's the most annoying thing, you know. I mean, I'm just saying, when it comes down to it, I've been writing books and doing this stuff for 6 years going on, and 10,000 units moved is good by other people's measures, but not by mine. It's not paying the bills. right now I've also got various services that you can get through, like Fiverr and Simbi.com and Upwork, you know, where I'm transcribing or doing all these other things. Right now I'm doing everything I can just to pay the bills and keep moving with my projects. But I don't even have the money to pay my editor right now. And thank God she likes my book so much that she's just willing to do it for free. But, you know, it still hurts my fragile male ego. I'm just saying.
Ahoy, Brady Alex. Thanks for dropping in. He's he's a solid dude and a great matey to have on board here and helping to do what he can to promote Pirate Radio podcasts, as well as very active on Minds.com as far as reminding content and upvoting and the like. So someone you might want to keep an eye out for yourself, Thomas. We've pretty much covered, I think, about as much as we want to here for the feature end of things. There's a lot to talk about in the after show. It's going to run the course of about 1 hour. Of course, people that aren't aware, we've been talking today with Thomas Neuter, author of The Penis, My Sword. No, did I get that right?
How did I know you were going to go there? Yeah, I'm the man of 20 different names. Thomas Neuter, author of The Things, www.thepenismysword.com.
I'm sure a lot of others got The Penis, My Sword, so Thomas Neuter. Well, it's good that you're,
the mind,
it's good you're able to take a joke and not be too serious about some things all the time necessarily. Some people just so damn uptight when it comes to these jokes. Or
how dare you?
You know, the one thing that we didn't address, though, and it's too bad we saved this for the end, but, you know, the captain, based on the ship's articles, what he does require here on the Robin Hood is that all guests, if they are interested in coming aboard on a formal basis, are asked to provide a bit of a pirate story of some kind, some sort of anecdote or angle, a joke, a riddle, anything along those lines. One of the things I was going to just kind of setting things up here is drawing to your attention. You might know about this yourself, but Portland, I guess, from what I hear, has had a real history Shanghaiing would occur on a wide scale basis. A lot of people, I guess, don't know this, but there are even to this day tunnels that exist underground. I guess that would be in the close to the ports there, of course, in that region along the shores of the city. Have you heard anything about this? I guess there's some underground, they have cells and dungeons of sorts where they
Actually never heard of this.
Oh, boy. Well, it's something that we've not looked into all that extensively, but it's definitely worth, of course, for people that are interested in taking a look at. There is a YouTube series, I think it's been around now for a few years, it's Underground World, where people can discover all these sort of subterranean caverns, labyrinths, and the like, which so much is out of sight, out of mind. That, I mean, you talk about occult. Well, that's all the word really means, folks. Hidden or unseen. So, yeah. So much that goes on which people have no idea about. In fact, living here as I do in South Korea, the most heavily tunneled nation on the face of the earth is here where we live. People say North Korea, but they've got things set up, I guess, for a full-blown underground invasion. I believe many of these tunnels are presumably quite closely monitored, as would they be in places such as Palestine, where the Palestine Liberation Army and the like do what they can in order to have mostly goods, foodstuffs and the like, you know, so they can feed their families, eat, and just basically, you know, survive. We're not necessarily talking weapons here to help fuel their resistance to Zionist occupation, but just generally, you know, once again, this means of them to get by and manage to live. But yeah, if you could provide a bit of a pirate story or angle of some sort, we could actually make it onto the Robin Hood for the after show. We'll head on up there have a chat with the captain, if that's at all possible, or something.
Hey, I'll stick around. Let's do this after party, bro.
What kind of, do you have a pirate story in mind then? Any kind of angle or something?
Oh, you mean right now?
You betcha. Now
I'm sorry. You put me on the spot here and I'm trying to think. When it comes to anything pirate based, yar. You know, I think I'd the only thing that comes to mind, actually, is something you mentioned about South Korea, but it's not pirate-based. It's actually CIA-based. One of the best – I don't mean like there's any good stories that came from the Korean conflict or the Korean War. That's like a whole other conversation in and of itself. But for some reason, it stuck in my head when you mentioned about South Korea and the tunnels. There was a guy who got dropped off in Laos or whatever. He was a CIA operative. He basically trained the Laotians there into like this super army. And he also got with like the local princess. He actually married her, and it got crazy. Like the commies like kidnapped her or whatever. And this guy struck all the way into China itself just to get her back. And it caused such an uproar. You know, he had his men, his soldiers were like stapling the ears of enemies that they kill for bounty and sending it back to America to his handlers. His handlers got super pissed about that, and so they pulled him out eventually. But not until he had done all this wild stuff, like I said, fighting all the way up into China, like just unstoppable force. There was an article that was about this, and I could easily find it right now, but right now we're talking on here and I can't get on my Firefox. But if you look it up, I mean, it's there. It's there. I mean, you know, the guy's old. He survived all of that mess. He moved out here. He not only moved out to America after the war was done, quote unquote, but he also moved out the Laotians that were in his tribe, that were his soldiers, and his wife. You know, so they all came to America afterwards. And even though he lost some fingers, like, you know,
I think I might have worked with this guy, the fellow that
you might actually know who I'm talking about. Yeah,
I think I sat side just right next to him as he was at that point in his 60s. Not necessarily the same character, but someone of that ilk who was telling me, just laying all the stuff on me about how he'd been part of these covert operations in North Korea. I'm not sure if this was. I don't think it was during the war. It was more probably the Vietnam era, and all kinds of who knows what, completely off the record black ops kind of deal. That's one of the places people talk about prisoners of war, MIAs and whatnot, from the Korea conflict. Well, a lot of people don't know that there are prisoners that were taken from Vietnam as well. U.S. soldiers, they say, what is it? Leave no man behind. Well, I think
no man behind, yeah.
In that instance, that particular conflict, which I think was framed from the official version of events, simply as a, it's always just a police action or operation. They want to kind of downplay and give it a euphemistic sort of spin. But that a lot of these MIAs and POWs from the Vietnam War ended up in North Korea, and that's where they've been living the rest of their lives. Some of them, a number of them probably dead by now, but presumably still a few alive. People like John McCain know full well what the deal is there. They've got a pretty clear sense of things. And others within the U.S. government, they choose not to talk about it, you know. And it's completely, it's not something that the mainstream media has the balls to address either. So,
oh, true.
Which is really quite something. And a lot of it could tie into this whole business of even where we find ourselves today with all the hubbub and the big to-do as far as their nuclear program and the threat of war on the peninsula, on and so forth. So it's all a chess game, of course, and fear factor to the max. But so that would be about it then, I guess, for your kind of pirate story, kind of a little bit of an angle of intrigue and so forth. You've got a few links here we'd maybe like to get out, of course, to the public just so they can know a little bit more about. We've got you at thepenismysword.com, Anubis.
Thank you.
UbisUnit.com. You have a presence once again over, of course, on minds.com, just / Thomas Duder. Facebook, that bastard from Bellingham. And you have a similar Twitter account. What's the handle over there exactly?
That bastard FB. It's the same thing. That bastard from Bellingham. Well, that bastard FB in that case.
That,
you know, I'm also on
FB.
Yep, I'm also on Instagram. You can catch me on Patreon, of course. If you don't want to just give me money like that or send it to my PayPal, which you can do that too if you want to donate to the cause. But you can always catch my services, which is in audio transcription, in virtual office management and assistance, as well as my big thing, which is blog posting. I'm a great content writer by all means. And you can hit me up on Upwork, Fiverr. You can even hit me up on Simbi.com if you just want to try me out for free, quote unquote free. So by all means, yeah, there's all sorts of, I'm all over the place. Now at thepenismysword.com, you can certainly find all of my links and my social media contacts. Heck, I'm even on LinkedIn, you know? Find me. The only thing is, we are currently still updating the website of www.thepenismysword.com. For the most part, the woman that's working on it from Simbi, she's doing a great job, Melanie Smith. It's just, we're waiting on the name service to move over, and we got to revert it back to a particular file. Because what she did for me was just great. It was killer. The only problem is, once again, waiting on the name servers, and it's not pointing to the right place just yet. But I'm very paranoid, and I use an anonymous who is from the Bahamas. Cause no, I don't want you to know who I am. Just saying.
Okay. So you basically, are you telling us then you're operating under a pseudonym?
Well, yes. Thomas isn't my real name.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go. How about that? And that's one of the great things, of course, too. As far as Minds.com is concerned, you probably don't want to let too many out there in your Facebook audience or anyone, any of the trolls or the haters over there know about that. They might...
You'd be surprised. I'll let just about anybody onto my feed. The thing is, I think I gave you a warning when you first showed up on my feed and let you know, I post offensive material, softcore porn, you know, religious and theistic and political rants and all sorts of stuff. You know, I do take a bi-monthly purge to my feed, and anyone who just can't hang, they just can't hang. If you don't like information and facts, get the fuck out. Because I bring links, I bring citations, and if your sources are weak, I will attack them. Because that's the kind of person I am. Once again, aggression issues. On the other hand, like you stated, though, I don't need the trolls or the haters to know my power name. They don't need to know my power word, you know, my real name. You know, it's kind of like magicians or the generalist himself. Knowing all three of their names, you could think that you would have power over them, but in some cases, you will not like the response. And in my case, I was a troll before I became a professional author, I need to point out. So, no, you will not like my counter. You will not like my reprisal. Let's just keep it like this.
Speaking of social media presence, we, of course, do offer to all of our guests complimentary subdomain URLs. I think we were talking about this just last night, drawing that to your attention. So you, if in any way interested, will be able to put something together along the lines of WPRPN.com/Thomas Duder or even Anubis Unit, if that's how you'd kind of like to have things set up. We are going to transition on over to the Rogues Gallery. Today, episode 79 of Pirate Radio Podcast. I'm not sure, has it been a lucky October Friday the 13th or not? Bit of a mess up there, and kind of getting side railed and things kind of going all sideways there from the start. I think we managed to rebound in a pretty decent way, though.
We faced those gremlins. We exercised those demons. We took care of it.
Sure. We'll talk a little bit more about the dark side, perhaps, in the after show, along with maybe a little bit more of the group's music. The Bellingham music scene would be another kind of talking point, as well as perhaps a little bit of miscellaneous politics. In the meantime, folks, let's not forget our calendar coming up here over the balance of October. We have another Minds.com personality coming up next week. Rational Outlaw will be joining us. Looking forward to that one. And, of course, capping things off at the end of the month, our Halloween Roundtable. So let's not forget as well that we have got our Operation Secret Santa going to be kicking off mid-December, so we'll kind of be transitioning from the dark, gothic, macabre sort of feel to things to a more kind of upbeat, uplifting, let's reach out and try to cultivate a little more charity approach. So just stand by there, Thomas. We're going to cue up the outro as we move on into the Rogues Gallery, either the Howling Wolf, the Scurvy Dog, or the Mossy Wench. I'm not sure. Which would you prefer?
I really do like the term Mossy Wench. How mossy is she?
Well, I guess we're going to have to go and have you decide for yourself. So on that note, folks, thank you very much once again. This has been episode 79 of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I am your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Until we meet out on the high digital seas yet again, happy sailing. Aye now, thar we be.
Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, knob, and dial, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside the bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Don't forget, if you're looking for a little more free-flowing action, we've likely got another great Rogues Gallery after show coming up next in either Google Hangouts or Skype. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past year and a half plus, you might want to drop by our new Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. This week, we're sending a big and hearty shout-out to our most recent Robin Hood patron, Missouri-based podcast promoter, and Lost Arts radio producer, Emily Anderson. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Be sure to join us again same time next week. Amazingly, we're now booked solid until December, with a whole wide range of colorful guests and show topics, along with what's bound to be a few big surprises. So be sure to drop by WPRPN.com's feature interview area and check out what we've got on tap for the last few months of 2017. If you yourself have an intriguing idea for a guest or story, you can either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. WPRPN.com network subdomain links are also now available. Great for artists, musicians, podcasters, social media personalities, or pretty much just any landlubber looking to boost their online visibility, presence, and reach. Basic accounts can be launched for only $15 a year. Staking your claim now helps not only strengthen you and the network, we're also looking out for the little guy. That's right, folks. Half of all WPRPN's profits are redirected right back into the hands of the people who really need it most. Community charity. After all, we are the Robin Hood. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by liking, subscribing, commenting on, sharing, and following any of our main social media channels via Facebook, iTunes, Twitter, YouTube, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho!